president and hopes to be a Yale student in another year, focusing on business law. I'll be looking him up in the future just in case. We might need some help. So Matt, thank you for being here tonight. Hello everyone, thank you for coming out this evening. I'm Matthew Patino and I'm a senior and student body president here at Noble High School. Governor LePage has been doing these meetings across our great state, and it's a pleasure to have him here tonight. It's my honor to introduce him, so without further delay, our governor, Mr. Paul LePage. Now, if you could please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. What I would like to do and what I do at these town halls is give a little some opening remarks and then we open up to questions. I'm not here to try to persuade you or convince you that you should vote for a Republican or that my programs are the best or that I walk on water. Because if I walked on water, the headlines would read, I can't swim. And therefore, that's really why I do town halls. I do town halls to give you a different perspective of what you read in the newspapers. Because of a built-in bias within the media in our country. So, first of all, I'd like to just say the state of Maine is in probably the best fiscal shape that it's been in the last 50 years. Recently, ALEC, which is the American Legislative Coalition or group or whatever, which is an organization that has legislators around the country as members, I've named you one of the top five governors based on my economic policies. There's no question that my economic policies are good policies because the way they were developed, very simply, by taking a look at all 50 states and looking at the 10 most prosperous and the 10 poorest. And that's how we look at it. And am I a genius? No. I just look for common denominators and what works in prosperous states. It's that simple. It's not rocket science. And what's wrong with Maine right now are things that I've been speaking about for several years since I became governor, is our regulations, our taxation, and our energy costs. If we could fix two, I would say fix your taxes and fix the energy cost. The energy cost is costing us companies every day from coming here. We're losing companies. We've lost paper companies. Number one issue is energy. Number two issue is regulations when it comes to the paper industry. We lost Airbus. Or we weren't competitive, I should say we lost, and we weren't competitive getting Airbus here because of our energy. The first question they asked me was, how are you with energy costs? And my response was, we are the cheapest in New England, and which is a fact. And the second question was, how do you compare with Alabama? And that's where we died. Alabama was buying, they're delivering power to Alabama at 4.2 cents because Alabama comes out of hydro, which is essentially through the TVA. We have very high cost of electricity because we only endorse wind and solar. Now, wind and solar is not bad. I'm not suggesting they're bad. I'm just suggesting they're expensive. Quebec, the province of Quebec, has 41,000 megawatts of electricity to sell. I want to buy it. My opponents in the House will say, we want the money to stay here in Maine. We don't want company called Iberdrola, and they're out of Spain. Emera, they're a Canadian company out of Nova Scotia. So, the majority of our electricity is not, and the profits don't stay here, they're owned by out-of-state companies. If you had an apartment in Montreal, about 1,100 square feet, you could get your lights and electricity for about $30 to $35 a month. How many pay $30 to $35 a month? No. Well, let me tell you an even better story. If you heat with electricity in Montreal at 1,100 square feet, in the months of December, January, February, you will pay roughly $100 plus the cost of getting the lights. Your heat's about $100, the lights will be about $25, $50. So you can get it for about $135 a month in December, January, February. I don't think you can do that anymore. People have been criticizing me for a year. Why are you against solar? Why are you against wind? The answer, folks, despite what you read in the newspaper, is I am not against wind and I'm not against solar. I'm against above market pricing. I'm against anything that is higher than the market. I spoke yesterday at Rotary Club of Waterloo, and he said to me, well, you put heat pumps in your house. So why are you for heat pumps? Why would you go for solar? Very simple. Heat pumps lowers my electricity. Solar doesn't. And solar, I have to put money in and you have to pay for it. I don't need that. So I put it in and I pay my own electricity bill. I don't have to sell it back to you and you make money off and me pay higher rates. If solar came in and said, I will use the electricity bill in my home. If I have extra, I will sell it to the utilities at the price that the utilities pay, the wholesale price. I would applaud and then help them install it because it would be a good thing for everybody. Good thing for the owner, good thing for the people of Maine because they wouldn't have to pay above the market price. So that's why our energy, we need to be serious about it. Our income tax, the income tax in America, the average income tax for the 40 states who have an income tax, 10 don't, I think roughly 10, 9 or 10. Somebody always screams and hollers by making a simple mistake, but the general sense is this, 10 states or close to 10 states have no income tax, it might be 9. The other states, the average income tax is 5.5%. State of Massachusetts is in that range, 5.5%. Maine is 7.12%. After I fought for 4 years to get it down from 8.5%, we're still above the average. There's a referendum this year to add 3% for anybody who is, well, anybody who has been successful in Maine and has a family income of $200,000, they will be penalized an additional 3% that will bring it up to 10.12%, which will be the second highest in America. Second highest behind California. And California's highest marginal rate doesn't kick in until you earn $1 million. In Maine, it's going to kick in a $200,000 family income. So, it's bad for me. And then people say, oh no, but this money's going to go for our kids in schools. Okay, let's talk about schools. Maine has 177,000 kids going K through 12. We have 127 superintendents. Maybe 126 if once in a while one leaves or something, but it's in that range. Explorer has 3 million kids, K through 12, 64 superintendents, 64. Maine ranks about 40th in performance, between 35 and 40 in performance, depending on who you speak to. And the United States ranks in the 20s worldwide. So Maine is not doing that well. Florida is ranked number 7 as performance. Utah is ranked number 2 in performance. And Utah spends $6,200 per student. Maine, to administer a school district in Maine, is about 5% of the school budget, and the rest of the country is 2.4% of the school budget. So we are just out of line in administering our schools. That money should go into the classroom. There is plenty of money. It's just that we don't prioritize the spending properly. I walked in here, and the first thing I saw was a workshop. Wow. I took one course in woodworking in junior high school, in seventh grade, that I never took another one. My hobby is making furniture. Why? Because I made a little bookcase back in seventh grade, and I was so happy I continued doing it because I liked it. So, education is about inspiration. And the problem with Maine is we have two winners and two losers. We have superintendents make very good wages, anywhere is about $250,000, some $160,000, some retire, and they make $240,000 retire because they retire on a Friday, start collecting their pension at $100,000+, and then they get a new contract, a superintendent, another $150,000, so they make more money than, well, they're going to have to pay the surplus, you know, they're going to have to pay this penalty. Which, frankly, I think Maine doesn't have to go very far to see prosperity. If you go to New Hampshire, in fact, some of the people in the legislature shop over at Somerville. I have some pictures of certain people doing it. But the point is, no sales tax, no income tax. They live and survive on one leg. We have a three-legged stool. We have an income tax, a sales tax, and a property tax. But let me give you the real story behind property taxes. New Hampshire is ranked the 7th highest property taxes in America, number 7. And they have no sales tax or income tax. Maine has an income tax, which is above the national average. It has a sales tax that's well below the national average. That's one place we're good. But where do we rank in property taxes? 9th highest in the country. So folks, we have the same population as New Hampshire. I will agree, we have a bigger geography, so we have more roads. But guess what? The taxes don't go to roads. The gas tax takes care of roads. A little bit of debt service on the bonds we borrow. But the general fund doesn't feed the roads. So what do we have? We have a spending problem. I passed the budget. The last budget I passed, 5.75 income tax, and the total budget was totally balanced and $300 million less than they passed and the legislature passed. And you hear me say the legislature, not Democrats, and I'll tell you why. Because the budget could not have passed if the Republicans stood firm. They created like a cheap suit. And they've done it 3 times. So this time I'm going around the state and I'm telling people what's going on and I'm telling you, I don't care who's elected, except that I want somebody that's fiscally conservative that understands economics and money. Because we have a broken school system. Now, the last 6 years, we fought like crazy to fight against abuse in welfare. And we've made some progress. Many of the people, in fact, most of the people that have been come off welfare in the last 5 years in the state of Maine are earning 118% more income today than they were on welfare. And we're tracking. Now, is it perfect? No. But the purpose of welfare is supposed to be a safety net. And last budget, I took everybody that was on a wait list, the mentally ill, the disabled, and the elderly were taken off the wait list for medical services. They were taken off, they were completely paid for. When this legislature came back in and they put 3,000 people back on the wait list, only about 1,200 to 1,500 came off of the 42 to 4,500 that they were on at the time. They took them, they put them back on the wait list. Today, we, through the help of Mary Mayhew, Commissioner Mayhew, and DHHS, we reduced the wait list, but we had it completely done away with. And in the budget, they took that $30 million, the $30 million that they took away, they spent $10 million on undocumented people in the state of Maine, in the big cities, and the rest went to education. And we still have those big teachers in America, with the exception of the high-priced schools. I mean, schools like Cape Elizabeth, Dalton, and some of the richer communities. And this referendum, the 3% surcharge you're going to have, guess what? It's going to go to them. It's not going to Carrickmacock, Eustis, Greenville, Acton. It's not going to small communities. It's all going to the cities. I'm telling you, we can fix this, but we don't. So I've talked about energy, I've talked about taxes. Regulations, we're constantly fixing regulations. But I'm just going to give you two regulations in Maine that I find repugnant. One, I see a few people here with gray hair like I do, so I mean, you're probably grandparents. If your grandparents in the state of Maine, and you want to help your kids out while they go to work and you're retired, and you want to do daycare for your grandchildren, which is an admirable thing, you got to go get fingerprinted in the state of Maine. You're going to have to get fingerprinted to do daycare for your grandchildren. How stupid is that? The next thing you got to do, the next one, and I look, I'm not saying that every parent's great and every grandparent's great. But I'm going to tell you, I don't think the government should be fingerprinting grandparents. Let's go fingerprint bad people. And I don't think grandparents as a class of constituent are bad people. The next one, which is my favorite one, it is the most ridiculous law on the face of this earth, but it passed in the House and the Senate. I vetoed it, but it was overridden. If you are a foreign national, and you come to Maine to live. And in your foreign country where you were born or where you were living, you committed a sexual harassment or a sex crime. Of course, we don't have access to those records because it's a foreign country. So we passed the bill that says, if you come to live in Maine, you will voluntarily put yourself on a sex offender list. It's been in effect for 2 years. I'm still waiting for somebody to register. Only in Maine. It's an insane bill. And the person who sponsored the bill is not only turned out of the House now, no, it didn't turn out of the House, it decided to go up to the higher chamber of the Senate. So I can't see the I can't wait for the encore. It's just silly. That's what we have to deal with. So now let's go to the five referendum questions real quick. Number one, marijuana. I'll admit, I told Holly Cox this afternoon when I was 18, My ex-wife and I tried it. I was a beer man and a wine man. Still am. And my ex-wife, same way. She tried it with me. I don't believe that she's ever smoked beyond it. It was just an experiment. We didn't like it. Her excuse was it stunk. My excuse was I like beer better. Not saying the beer's better, but it tastes better to me. So I can't pass judgment on it, but I will say this. All you need to look is the statistics that are coming out of the state of Colorado and the state of Washington. And the deaths on the highways are way up. And we do not have a method to see if someone's intoxicated with drugs. We don't have a method. So it's a problem. I'm going to vote no. Second one is grant choice voting. I'm going to bring it up because it's a city law. It was tried once for one election cycle in the state of Vermont. It failed, and then they got rid of it because they couldn't decide who was going to be the governor. It was crazy. They couldn't get the math right, and then they started accusing everybody of fraud. Let me tell you this, very simple. The Constitution says, in the state of Maine, it's a plurality. He who weakens the most votes win. Before you can implement ranked choice voting, you have to change the Constitution. Otherwise, it's unconstitutional. They should have thought of that first. But even that issue aside, if you truly want a governor with the majority of the votes, because Elliot Cutler says, that he should have won in 2010. That the math wasn't counted right, that the number guy that came in second should have been the governor, because more people put him in second than they put me in first. Well, the simple way to solve that is if you don't have a governor with 51%, you just say the top two vote getters will get out of runoff. That's what most of the country does. And even Vermont's gone that way now. They're still doing it the way we do it. That's why they decided to get rid of ranked choice voting, is it was easier to do like Louisiana does. You take the two top vote getters, then you have a runoff within 30 days. Done. Then you get someone that has 51% of the vote, or at least 50 plus 1. So I'm totally against ranked choice voting. The background checks, if it was only background checks, I would say, let's do it. Because we are need to. But that's not what this bill is about. This is the most poorly written bill there is. This is what it says. Let's say I have a friend. Let's say my security boss is a pretty good guy. So I have a new gun. He wants to go hunting. He asked me to borrow the gun. So I give him the gun for the weekend. Oh, well, if this law passes, we have to go to a gun dealer and we have to have a background check done on the law. Then he can borrow my gun and go hunting. Now he wants to bring the gun back on Monday. Let's see, he goes to the week, he wants to bring it back on Monday. And he can't just give me the gun back. We got to go back to the gun dealer and now we got to have a background check done on me. The owner of the gun, who's already had a background check done when he bought it the first time. But I have to have his second background check done. So that in the space of 3 days, he gets a background check, I get a background check. And we got to pay for it. The whole purpose of this bill is to have a federal registry. That's all it is. It's Mr. Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg. And this is my advice to Mr. Bloomberg. You go to New York City, you clean up the gun problems in New York City, then you go to Chicago and clean up the gun problems in Chicago, because they have the strictest gun control laws in America. And once you stop all the murders and homicides in those two cities, come see me and we'll talk. Because I'll tell you this, if you want to solve the problem of mass murders, it's not the gun. It's terrorism, and mental illness. And the state of Maine, which is one of the next the safest state in America, is like everyone else in America. We've abandoned mental illness. The problem's not the gun. The problem is the trigger and who pulls it. And the people pulling triggers are terrorists, and a lot of the most recent ones, dating back to 1959, the most recent mass murders in this country have been done with mental illness, have dealt with mental illness, and people that are maybe even in homicide of passion, which is domestic violence. So those are the issues that we should capture. I wear a bracelet against domestic violence, and still half of the murders in Maine occur through domestic violence. I will tell you, mental illness is a bigger issue than you realize. Now, this 3% that I was telling you about, the 3% surcharge is on people making $200,000. One of the biggest shortages in the state of Maine, psychiatrists, psychologists, dentists, and specialists in our medical profession. Already, the law has not even been passed, and already people are saying, hey, wait a minute, if they pass this silly law, I don't want to be in Maine. So now people are not taking jobs in Maine that are being offered in anticipation that this might pass. Folks, you don't want to do that. I don't think we want to do that. I certainly don't want to do that. Now, I don't have to worry about the 3% because I'm governor. I don't make enough money to get to the $200,000. And that's even with my wife working in a restaurant. Which leads me to the second referendum on minimum wage. The minimum wage is a bad bill for two, three, four, five different reasons. Number one, it's indexed. It's not going to be $12. Every year after that is indexed to CPI. So if we have another 2008, small businesses will go out of business faster than you can shake a stick because they'll have to increase their wages by 3 or 4%. They've already lost money. So it's a bad bill from that respect. The second one is you're putting my wife out of job because she's working, making $20 to $30 an hour, depending on the week, if it's a weekend or a weekday, on the coast of Maine during the summer, and she's going to be relegated to be down to $12 because they've taken away the tip credit. Now, there's 14,500 people working at or below minimum wage. 8,500 of them are servers and restaurants. The other 6,000 are some people that there are maybe 1,000 or so people that do get minimum wage because of the job that they do. They lack the proper work skills to earn higher. But a very large percentage, like a big population of people that are hired by Martin's, TJ Maxx, Hanford, different companies in the state, and they hire people with chronic and severe mental illness. They've never worked in their lives, but they're getting a paycheck now. They're not going to earn a lot of money, but it's not the money. As a matter of fact, the federal government says, if you earn too much money, we're going to take away your services. So it's a catch-22. These people will lose their jobs. Because I'm telling you, no one's going to be paying $12, $13, $14 and expect to get an efficient worker all day long. Now, in 3 or 4 years, it will go back to the old way, and they will have adjusted to the minimum wage, and they probably will start doing it again. But for the next 2 or 3 years, it's going to be real tough for those folks. And many companies in Maine right now, the unemployment rate of 3.5%, which the latest numbers I saw last night, 3.5% stayed in Maine below the national average, are paying much more the minimum wage in the state of Maine. You have to take a sample. By the way, at 29%, you see a lot of warning signs. So, let the market determine that. Now, I haven't even talked about the big problem. The big problem is this. It's not if you're working. It's if you're retired and only have an app. It's Social Security. 325,000 people out of the 1.3 million people in the state of Maine live on Social Security or SSDI for disabilities. It's all the income they get, and they will not be getting an increase. If you go from 750 or 765 to $12, don't think that the bread, the eggs, and the milk are not going to go up. Don't think that the coffee and items are once in a while, once a week, have a little more coffee, a lot of questions. Please go to the window, ask for your money, you're not working out. Everyone's working out. Everyone. Ask them away. So I say to you, the minimum wage is bad for the elderly of this state. And we have the oldest state in the union with the highest percentage of people who are retired. I urge you to vote that down. Because those who can afford it leave for 6 months of the day. And they go to Florida, South Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, Texas. There's so many people that leave 6 months of the day. We don't want that. We want people that means to save. We want the great trust, and we want us to keep them using our banks so our doctors, our dentists, can serve these people, and we can have a prosperous economy. So that's very, very important. And the background check, you know, that one there is so silly that every time I hear President Obama or Mike Bloomberg talk about it, I go out and buy another gun. And someday I might even go and buy bullets. But to this point, I've only had guns. So the point is that people use many different ways to kill people. In southern France, they use a vehicle to kill 90 people. Sometimes we use guns, strangulation, knives. The problem is not the gun, it's mental illness. So with that, did I miss any? I think I got them all. So let's open it up for questions. How's that?
All right, sounds good, Governor. If you do have a questionnaire sheet still, please raise your hand and I will get that from you. I do have a couple. I'll come around and get them in just one moment. We'll start here though. Robert Porter, you met earlier. You're from Berwick. Stand right up.
Governor, are you aware that welfare fraud in Maine is 0.2%, while the national average is 4%, according to DHHS? If so, why do you regularly, portray so many welfare recipients in Maine as perhaps abusing the system, fraud, what have you?
Okay. Very good point.
And that was the statistics I got. I didn't make them up. They were from the...
No, that's fine.
They were from the Portland Press Herald.
Well. Let me tell you, right now as I speak to you, there's about 150 cases, 100 plus cases, because I always, people say, oh, it wasn't exact. Over 100 cases of labor fraud, Department of Labor, people who are getting unemployment that don't deserve. We should stop that. One is too many. We have over 135 cases of welfare fraud that are sitting in the Attorney General's office that will probably never go to court unless the Republicans win the House and the Senate in November and we get a new Attorney General. Because we need somebody who will abide by the state of the law. We have laws, we are a society of laws. If we ignore our laws, they get worse. Now, why welfare fraud? Our SNAP program, which is food stamps, is about $330 million a year. Okay? One ATM machine that we've located cashes 2% of the entire annual budget. And it's done. I can hit an iron to Western Union from the ATM machine. That's a real problem to me. The real problem with money that we give to people to live in Maine is sent from Western unions to other places. $64 million of the money on the EBT cards is spent in the other 49 states. $64 million of $330 million is spent outside Maine. A lot of it, right here, in southern Maine, right across the border. That's the number one state. But beyond that, some of the cities where the money goes, Bronx, Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Kissimmee, Las Vegas. Now, I understand Las Vegas. I've even been there a couple times. Don't gamble, but I've been there. Kissimmee, Walt Disney. No, I can understand Walt Disney. But who goes to the Bronx and Brooklyn in the middle of winter? And Philadelphia's a nice city, but man, the amount of money going to Philly, I got to question the judgment of the vacationing that they're taking. So that's the reason why. And I'll tell you the most important reason why is 4,200 people were on a wait list when I presented the last budget. The legislature put money back in. I took some of that money that we were going to use for the wait list, and they took it for other reasons. So we still have people on a wait list. So fraud, every dollar we save in fraud is a dollar that can go to those folks. And if we don't want to have fraud, and we don't think fraud's important, then let's not have laws. It's like immigration. Everybody says immigration is so important. Illegal immigration is not a problem. They're just undocumented workers. Now, we're saying that. Wouldn't it stand to reason that a drug trafficker is nothing more than an unlicensed pharmacist? Think about it. It's just a play on words. We either are, if the immigration laws are bad, get rid of them. If they need tweaking, fix them. That's all. Then if you say, we don't need those laws, or you can only pick and choose the laws you're going to enforce, then that's called the Wild West. That's what we have in Washington right now, a president who just overreaches every day and does whatever he wants. And nobody dares to challenge him. Well, I will just close with this on this question. The United States of America, the federal government, was created by the states. It wasn't the federal government that created the states. The states created the federal government. They're supposed to be a limited government. So the overreaching that's going on, like today, for instance, the state of Maine passed a resolution. They did not want the national park or monument in the northern woods. They had local referendums, and 70% of those voting in that referendum said we don't want a park. President Obama signed a national monument today. Now, that's good for those who like it. See how many applaud it? Let me tell you, do you know the land? Have you walked over the land? The land is cut over, forest land. It's completely cut over. It's no value for 80 years. And it's going to take away hunting. You might have a little snowmobiling, a little bit of hunting in certain areas, but the majority of it is off limits. Now, if the state wanted it as a park, they would have added it to Baxter, who's right adjacent to it. I think it was a bad decision. I think it was overreach. And I will also tell you one thing. Please study the wildfires in America. Please go study where the majority of the forest fires occur on federal lands. It even happened here in 1948. Acadia National Park burned to the ground. Boom. And it will again because it's not properly managed. It never is because they already, I think it's $14 or $15 million in arrears in doing the maintenance, the deferred maintenance at the park. That's only here. It's billions of dollars nationally that we don't have to take care of our land. I'd say let the states do it. Next.
Say your name.
Good evening, Governor. I'm David from Commerce. Thank you for the town hall meeting and for doing them. I'm like our illustrious congresswoman, but be that as it may, I want to comment and complain about the situation that was in the press last week, including the Press Herald and Boston Herald. There needs to be some very serious welfare reform done. What I want to know is how are you going to make we Mainers whole after money has been dispersed to illegal aliens, illegal immigrants, not only the Iranian, as identified in the Press Herald and Boston Herald. What about the Somalis? What about the Mainers that live here in Maine that are unemployed and the veterans, that are struggling, among others? Mainers need to be put first, number one, not illegal asylum seeker Somali immigrants that are in Portland, Westbrook, Biddeford, Lewiston, Auburn, and so on and so forth, with all due respect.
Correct. Now, let me try to explain that whole issue. And I will tell you right now, any million dollar, taxpayer dollar spent on this issue will never be made whole. Okay? It will not happen. Most of the welfare programs that were reformed back in 1996 under Bill Clinton, we have to follow federal law, federal regulations. Very, very difficult to get changes made, but we work at it every day. We have made some changes. For instance, the federal government says you cannot put a picture on your beekeeper. There is nothing in the federal statute that says we can't put a picture. So when they came to Maine and they said you can't do it, I said, fine. Where would you like me to send all the paperwork? Because we're done doing it. And I'll go lay off 500 people that work at DHHS that do nothing but welfare programs, entitlement programs. They said, well, wait a minute. Well, we'll let you do it. As long as you don't profile. I'm not interested in profiling. I'm not interested in going after anybody. This country is a country built with minorities and immigrants from around the world. I am from a French-Canadian background. And if you go back far enough, 400 years, I come from France. So I have no problem with that. We have three types of refugees that come to me. We have a primary, secondary, and an asylum seeker. A primary refugee is someone that's been vetted in their foreign country and sent to a specific place in the United States. Somali, let's say, where a lot of them came to Lewiston, a lot of them were sent in other parts of the country. It's about $18,000 per person, it's 18 months. The federal government will cover the primary refugee for 18 months. They do give them a lot of resources. So it's federal dollars. Then there's a secondary refugee who was a primary, he becomes a secondary. In other words, let's say we have some people in Lewiston, in Atlanta, Georgia, got the customs. In talking to each other, they decide that Maine's a better place to live than Atlanta, or the benefits are better, so they move from Atlanta to Maine. That's called a secondary refugee. The state of Atlanta does not send the money to the federal government. They keep the money, they just lose the refugee, and we have to pick it up. Then there's asylum seekers. Now, this is where I have a real problem that most people don't understand. If an asylum seeker is looking, it comes to the United States, comes to the same Maine, says, I'm seeking asylum. How did they get here? How did they get here? There's only two ways. There's only two ways they get here. One is they get a documentation from the federal government that allows them to come here, and they don't stay the visas. Or two, they come here illegally. So there's only two ways. I go back to them. If they seek asylum, if they don't come directly from the foreign country, they were already here. They don't stay either a visiting visa or a student visa, and then they claim at the very end they want asylum, which allows them another 18 months. Allows them 18 months, but the federal government makes the decision. But the 18 months that they need services is handled by the state, your dollars. That's the way it works. 70% of those who are given asylum, you know, they seek asylum, are sent back to their foreign, to their country. So the point is, if we find that they came here undocumented, then we have laws. Let's enforce the law. If they came here overstaying their visa, we have laws for that as well. So why aren't we enforcing the laws? We're not enforcing the laws because some people say we don't like the law, it needs to be reformed. Okay, let's fix it. Let's fix the law. But if you refuse to fix the law, and then you refuse to deport the people, then you're violating your own laws. And what's right with that? If you can violate that law, why can't you violate other laws? At what point and what laws do we enforce and not enforce? I'll give you an example. Let's look at marijuana. If that passes, the state of Maine will pass it and it's legal. The federal law says it's illegal. Now, here's the governor. As governor, you have to take an oath of office to uphold the Constitution of the state of Maine, and you have to take an oath of office to uphold the Constitution of the United States and all of its laws. So which one do I honor and which one do I not honor? That's a decision that's got to be made. So laws have value if you want to have a civil society. If you don't want to have a civil society, we can become nomads, we can become tribal, we can fight against each other and go back 200 years. There's been enough injustice done over the last 200 years. We don't need to go back to that. We just need to fix what we have. Now, the reason I am concerned about immigration that is using up our resources is if every dollar that goes to someone that's here undocumented is money that puts more people on a wait list. People with disabilities, people with mental illness, people that are elderly. I had one day coming out of a doctor's office, a dentist's office, 7:30 in the morning, and there's a man leaning on a car. The reason he's leaning on a car is only one leg. He was a veteran. He said to me, "Governor, somehow I keep falling through the cracks. There's always an excuse why they can't give me a prosthetic leg." And it just so happens that we had just hired a new lawyer in the office. Her name was Polly Lust. And I said, "Well, I'll look into it for you." Get back to the office. I called Holly. I said, "Holly, I got a project for you." She said, "What do you need?" I said, "I got a guy here. Here's his name, his phone number. He needs a leg. Go find me a leg for him." Now, when somebody's focused in on him, and he was a veteran, she saw the problem. But he was getting the red tape all this time. Somebody had to focus in and start making the calls and not taking no for an answer. That's how that works. And so I do feel bad that we don't honor our laws. But I think we need to start bringing our country back to law and order. Because what's happening is these gentlemen that protect me as a governor put their lives at stake every single day, and they're needlessly being shot and killed because of their movement. Now, am I going to say there's no discrimination in this country? No. I will tell you this. The largest Ku Klux planned rally in the history of the United States occurred at Brownville Junction, Maine, in 1922, against the French Canadians coming down from Canada to work in the textile mills. My ancestry was part of that. So discrimination is no good. I wear a black band and a purple band. It's against one of the purples against domestic violence, the black ones against bullying. There are laws against both. But we have both in our society. So we have to start paying attention to the laws we make. Now, we also have to repeal some silly laws like you will voluntarily put yourself on a list that nobody knows you've ever committed a crime.
Next question is from Andrew Ritchie.
Hi, Governor. Thanks for the town hall. As you know, Maine has a problem with brain drain, and I'm just wondering. I'm from Lebanon. I'm currently working. I'm an entrepreneur in New York now, and I just want to know, given the kind of rhetoric you put out there around like people of color in Maine, like calling them drug dealers, etc. How could I bring a company here given the toxic environment that you create, the Confederate flags that I used to not see so many of?
Confederate flag?
You're not doing that, though. You're not like
that. Well, I see, like, on his Facebook, I see what applies to...
No, no,
I know, but, like, it seems like you're creating an environment where people feel...
First of all, sir,
with that.
You don't see that stuff on my Facebook.
In the comments section.
Okay. Oh, comment section. You're welcome to make any comment you want. Let me tell you this.
But you
let me tell you, explain to you. I made the comment that black people are trafficking in our state. Now, ever since I said that comment, I have been collecting every single drug dealer who has been arrested in our state. Sir, you are welcome to come look at it. That's all I will make a comment on. You're welcome to come look at it. I don't ask them to come to me and sell that poison, but they come. And I will tell you that 90%+ of those pictures in my book, and it's a three-ring binder, are black and Hispanic people from Waterbury, Connecticut, the Bronx, and Brooklyn. I didn't make the rules. I'm just telling you what's happening. Now, you can call it...
Well, there are white drug dealers out there, too. Maybe your police are profiled. And you don't... I mean, I...
No, they're all white. There's a whole lot of white girls, too. A whole lot of white girls. In fact, almost in every single picture is a white main girl in the picture. I'm not suggesting, but I will tell you...
I'm suggesting that
the heroin that's being distributed in Maine is essentially coming from Connecticut and New York. You can say white, black, or purple, or green, or white, or orange. The fact of the matter is, people from Connecticut and people from New York are coming to Maine, and they're killing our citizens. I'm sorry, but that's a fact. But people are dying. Five every 5 days.
His question isn't about that. It's about
the
proliferation of
race. Did we ask, you said we have a protocol. We have a protocol. You write a question, you ask a question, I'll try to answer it. You can call it profiling, call it whatever you want. I have been accused by the NAACP of saying that the black people can kiss my butt. That is a false. That was falsely reported in a newspaper. This is what I did. I told a reporter to kiss my butt because I wouldn't answer such a stupid question. Now, the NAACP also asked me to go to the Maine State Prison and meet with only the black prisoners. And my response was, I will go to Maine State Prison and meet with all prisoners, but I'm not going to meet with just one group of prisoners. So the point is, and if you look at my profile, that I helped many, many families. In fact, I even brought a black person into my family. Do I go out every day banging drums because I have a black son? No. In fact, the newspapers say that because he had to go back to Jamaica, once I put the paper, before I signed, if I signed that paper, he had to leave that day. I chose to wait till he was out of school. Nobody wants to give you the real story. But the fact of the matter is, sir, I am not a racist.
I didn't call
and
you
I don't promote it.
I didn't call you racist.
No, you're insinuating that somebody in the back of the room was saying, make it insinuation.
I might be saying that you don't speak out against certain issues enough. I feel like you create an environment where racists feel comfortable speaking up.
Yeah, I mean, that's
what I'm saying. Okay, Maine, it was elected governor of the state of Maine, which is 1.3 million people, which is about 98%+. Maybe a little less now because we do have ethnic groups that have come in the last decade or so. But it's over 95% of the state is white. And it's not my position, nor is it my responsibility, to speak for the rest of the country. Now, I will in a heartbeat if I see discrimination, if I see bullying, if I see domestic violence. I don't care if you're white, black, it doesn't make any difference. You'll hear me speak up. So, if I don't speak out enough, is it's not part of my routine, my daily activities in the state of Maine.
And then you said the
last question. We're going to go on to the next question, and I think we've addressed this as much as we can. So, Pat Stevie?
Good evening, Jordan.
Good evening.
I would like to know why are there not stronger animal welfare laws in Maine? There are no cruelty protection laws for farm animals. And also, do you not think that the baiting and trapping of bears is extreme cruelty?
I think that the laws in the state of Maine are very strong. In fact, we're the only state in the United States of America that has a surcharge, an excise tax on pet food for our animals. Why we do that is because we bring in about the rest of the country's stray dogs and stray cats, we neuter them and we put them out for adoption. So from that perspective, I think we're very, very good. From farm animals, I think that Commissioner Wickham and his people, when they have a complaint, they address it. Unfortunately, what I've been seeing is what is a cruelty to one is not cruelty to another, and then we get ourselves into courts, and so we have to fight it in courts. Do I feel that trapping bears is a bad? No, ma'am, I don't. It's a way of life in Maine. It's been going on for hundreds of years, long before we were state. And I just, it is what it is. I'm not saying you have to agree with me, but I don't see any reason why it can't be done if it's done to me. Next question.
All right. Beth, you have a question?
Matter of fact, I think that sometimes we treat the animals in Maine better than we treat our own citizens.
No.
Thank you, Governor. I would like to know what you can tell me or what you will do about the Quimby land transfer to the federal government recently recorded in Penobscot Registry of Deeds. It's my understanding that the federal government has no right to receive this land unless it's for a military base, a dock, a port, or a post office, and none of which I can see happening. So do you have any plans?
Well, unfortunately, that's not quite right. The Antiquities Act allows the President of the United States to take lands that are gifted to the United States of America. And it can be a monument or it can be a national park. I've been fighting it for as long as I've been governor. The President's received many letters from me. The delegation's received many letters from me. We've had some non-binding referendums in the local communities. The state legislature did a referendum, a resolution saying we didn't want another park in the North Woods, and the president simply uses the executive powers to put a national monument. What we have done is this. The state of Maine has a right of way through the Quigley land, and I built the road for it. We are logging, and we are going to continue to log the land and cross over the right of way. I am going to do everything in my power to have the next president reverse this decision. One person. We have a very good shot. One person, we have no shot. So I'll let you guess who's who. Next question. Yes, I'll give mine. Look, we try to get to all the questions. You, every week, since I've been doing my town hall, with the exception when you have to travel too far, you come in and you disrupt. But tonight, please, be respectful and let me close. Well, as I said earlier on when I started,
you never allowed me the opportunity.
Because you disrupt everybody.
But how can you not be a disruptor if you're not given the same opportunity? Okay,
this,
you know, I did write a question down. So how do I ask
the question? Okay, read this question. Read the question. If you sit there quietly, I'll read the question.
I should be able to ask you. Okay, you can read my question. Sure, I'll take it like that. I mean, it's very hard not to be depicted as a disruptor.
Interrupting. Would you like me to read your question?
I would love to.
Please be seated, and I will ask your question as the governor has indicated. Do you feel a responsibility to your constituents who are legal immigrants and will defend the Somali community against Donald Trump's recent xenophobic remarks at his rally in Portland? Keep in mind, the governor does not speak on behalf of Mr. Trump.
Yeah.
They are your constituents, so the question was, will you defend them?
I will defend legal Mainers every single day of the week against any harm that would come to them. My job, my primary job, is to make sure that they're safe. The second thing is we try to provide the best that we can with the resources that we have. Unfortunately, with the present administration in Washington, I have not been allowed to enforce all of the laws that are on the books. Now, if somebody comes to me from a minority community, so let's talk about Somalians, let's talk about people from Sudanese. I have met with them many, many times, sir. I have helped many of them, but I don't go bragging about it. Now, I cannot hold Donald Trump to everything he says, and I'm hoping that he has the same First Amendment rights that I have and you have. So I do what I think is best, and when people get discriminated against, I am the first one in their face, in the people that are screaming in their face.
Well, Donald, you were standing next to Donald Trump when he accused the Somalian community of increasing the danger in the state, which it isn't. So you said you're going to defend them, so will you tell Donald Trump that he's wrong in his depiction of the Somali community in Maine?
He has the same right that you have.
I know he does, but I'm saying, will you defend them?
I will defend them. If they ask me to defend them, I will defend them. I'll talk to them.
Folks, this happens just about every single week.
The point is, he wants me to step up and use my First Amendment rights to condemn Donald Trump. I'm not going to do that. But if someone comes to my office and asks for help, they will get it. I will do everything in my power to help them. And it's not based on color, it's not based on age, it's not based on religious, it's not based on anything.
I think this comes back to my point about not speaking up and enabling it.
Can you be disrespectful?
We can do this all evening long, going back and forth. Our time, the governor has been very generous with his time.
I do not have to speak out with everything everybody says. When I feel it's my place, I try to. It's just that simple. Now, as I said earlier, if I didn't come here, I would be more than happy to do any town hall where we have a one-on-one debate with a group, if they're civil and they're respectful, not a problem. I know that I disagree with these two ladies here, but no big deal. I mean, we have the right to disagree. And we have the right to agree, and in a formal debate, you may convince me. But at my age, it's probably pretty hard. I came here tonight, and I go around the state every night to try to give you the perspective of the governor, who every single day for the last 6 years has been attacked in the newspapers. A lot of it is a perception, and it's their opinion. I think that each and every one in this room has the right to an opinion. It's your opinion, and you have the right to, as these gentlemen do. But they also have to be civil. What they don't have the right to do is make up their own facts. And none of us have that. Now, am I perfect? No. Have I made mistakes? Yes. Have I been 100% wrong for the last 6 years? No. I have not been wrong 100% of the time. But most of the written press of me have not given me anything for 6 years. And that's fine. They even so far as went in to attack my wife, we had to hire lawyers to prove them wrong. And never did they apologize. Now, you can come after me all you want. But you go after my wife, and you go after my family, then I will become a human being. Like most men in this room will protect their families. So as I speak to you tonight, I'm trying to give you the facts behind the referendums. I think governing through referendum is not the best way to govern. I think we have a representative republic, we have legislators, and we disagree all the time. That, I will be very honest with you, I probably disagree with my party more than I disagree with the Democrats, with the exception of leadership. Because the leaderships of the caucus are picked by the caucus. And whoever has the votes becomes the leader. And so, for the Republicans, it's the rural part of the state of Maine, essentially. And for the Democrats, it's Portland, Wilston, and Bangor. It's that simple. So then, the ideology is set. All I'm trying to do, and my only message to you, is I look for Maine to be prosperous. I would love, and I work every single day for one thing, to take poverty and go to prosperity. In 2011, I had a couple of ladies in Maine write me nasty letters about my welfare positions. Recently, two of them wrote me letters and said, I hated you when I first heard about your program. Now I love you and I voted for you in the last election because you taught me how to get self-confidence and go out and get a degree. And this one of the ladies is an RN, and she's very proud of herself. She's making over $60,000. She's no longer, she's a single mom with two children, no longer on welfare. She's happy. I'm happy too. You know why? She's paying taxes. So, really what it's all about is my tenure as your governor, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, my motives and my reason for becoming governor has been to move us from poverty to prosperity. I know how to do it. I did it with many, many companies over the years. You may not agree with me on the method I do it, but I do it for one thing only, and one thing only. It's for the people of the state of Maine. It's for your children, your grandchildren, and your great-grandchildren, so they can live in poverty. He's looking at poverty in the past and not in the future. That is why we put a bill in last year to invite kids from other states that have student debt. And student debt is the largest debt in the country. So we're trying to get young people who have student debt to come to Maine to live and work. And then we give them interest-free loans, and if the employers of people with student debt pay out the student debt, the employers get dollar-for-dollar reduction on their taxes. So that the young population, we can attract them, we can keep them, and the rest of us old people can retire. Because we cannot sustain Maine society with 14,000 people dying and only 12,000 being born. There will become an end. I would allow my children, my grandchildren, to live in Maine, not have to travel to Canada or Florida to see. That's my motive. Now, you can agree with it or disagree with it, but poverty has Maine stricken. We look at New Hampshire, and there are 12,000 per capita income higher than we are without the tax burden that we have. We are in the top five poorest states. We have dropped from 42 as the worst place to live, now we're dropped down to about 36, but we're gaining. But we don't have enough people in Augusta to take on the economic policies that other states have taken on, and they're moving faster than we are. New Hampshire is one of them. Florida is another one. Texas, North Dakota, South Dakota, Alaska, of all places, with 600,000 people. That's all we're trying to do, is go to see what works and avoid what doesn't work. And I thank you for being here. I thank you for your questions. Every time I go out, I learn something new. But I will tell you this. Having a safety net for those who need it is really important. And if you're ages between 19 and 50, and you're able-bodied, then I ask you humbly to go get a job. Thank you very much.